Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney, and Kim Hance is going to be joining me in a few minutes, but she's running a few minutes late. So welcome to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer questions that you have on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and you could be our first caller. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900, or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Debbie. How you been?
Good. Josh and I haven't seen each other a long, long time, so we were catching up before the radio show started.
Yes, it's been quite a while.
So we also have seminars coming up. We have seminars in Kingston, and there's Kim. Anyway, so we have them in Kingston on March 28th, and that is at the Courtyard by Marriott. That's out in Kingston at 500 at Frank Sotile Boulevard in Kingston. And then we have special seminars. We have one March 21st at Glenn Sanders Mansion, and that is on aging in place. And then April, we have our basic estate planning and Medicaid planning seminars, and those are Tuesday, April 9th at 6:30 at the Courtyard by Marriott in Saratoga, Wednesday, April 10th at 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott in Troy. That's a new one. We haven't done one there before. And Thursday, April 11th at Glenn Sanders. And Thursday, April 11th in the evening at Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. Almost made it.
You're close. So Kim and I were talking yesterday, and she says, what are we going to talk about this weekend? And it seems like we've had kind of like a lot of clients that have come in where the spouse or significant other's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I said to Kim, because Kim used to work for Alzheimer's, I said, do you think that it is more prevalent now? Do you think more people are, or do you think people are more aware of it?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. Like we talked about, I think we're entering a time where we have more people aging than ever. We have all of our baby boomers now moving into that kind of system of growing older. But I do think a lot of it has to do that our diagnostics are much better. We have a much greater awareness. I think people, the stigma, while it's still there, I don't think there, you know, people are starting to recognize and they want to know what's going on. I think there's just a lot more awareness now. And that's taken a lot of work. For example, like Tuesday, I'll be down in Albany all day. It's our advocacy day for the legislative branches. So we spend the day Tuesday visiting legislators, educating them, talking to them about what the needs are. We're actually very lucky that in New York State, we have a lot of services for families. So I do think the awareness is really helping.
It is, too. And I think the earlier someone's diagnosed, too, that there are not a cure, but there are treatments.
Absolutely. I think the sooner we can engage in understanding what's going on, much like the cold or flu, we can't cure it, but we can treat the symptoms. And the much sooner we have the capacity to do that and identify what's going on, the longer we can sustain somebody in the community. I mean, you and I are working together on someone who is younger onset, and a lot of the things that we're putting into motion for her right now are things to help support her so that she can, you know, maintain her independence for much longer. She's moving so that she's closer to supports, so that at the point that she no longer can drive, she can walk, you know, she can take a bus. And we're making those connections with community supports so that she has somebody come in a few times a week to help her stay organized. I mean, that'll graduate at some point to where she'll need more care. Right now she doesn't need care, but she does need somebody who can help her, you know, remember to pay her bills. Remember that if something changes, her rent, whatever, that is something that needs to be taken care of on a monthly basis, because her short-term memory is not great. You know, and her closest support is far away.
It is, yeah.
So being able to, and a lot of times people don't realize what we can do to maintain someone's independence. And that's so important, particularly with this disease, because it's progressive and it becomes very debilitating. But in the very beginning and throughout the moderate stage, we really can keep people fairly independent and safe.
Yeah. And that's why we looked at community Medicaid for her, because she needs help. She maybe needs, what you say, 3 hours here and there.
A couple times a week,
which it can start out like that. And then as the disease progresses, once everything's in place, she could be reevaluated and get more hours.
Oh, she can graduate. You know, that's the big thing I tell people with a lot of the programs that we have available through community Medicaid in particular. We can start with 16 hours a day of care. I mean, getting the care generally, getting the hours isn't the issue so much. A lot of times it's just the caregivers, the lack of caregivers that are available. But getting the hours for people, particularly folks that need some type of what we call oversight and supervision because of a memory loss, it's available. And people don't realize that we have the opportunity to be able to, you know, not only provide care for the individual, but the caregiver. You know, the gentleman we met with yesterday just is so fresh in my memory because the caregiving part is taking such a toll on him. We're not even at the care part, right?
We're at
the planning part.
We're planning, and that's the situation, too, is they don't have any documents in place.
Right. And that was scary.
That was very scary. Kim and I kept thinking, well, what can we do? How can we fix this? You know, and it's something that it's going to take us a while. It's something that we can't just like all of a sudden go in and say, okay, fine, you need these papers here, sign this.
Right.
It's something where we're going to have to kind of work our way into it. And that's the problem. If you don't plan ahead, I mean, no one has a crystal ball.
Right.
So if when you're young and healthy, you do your documents, then they kind of just grow with you. I had clients that came in yesterday that they hadn't looked at their documents for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So basically her husband passed away 5 years ago. They came in 5 years ago when he passed away. We had a small estate administration we had to do, but she hadn't looked at her documents since then.
Right.
And so she came in yesterday with her son and we went through everything and she wanted some assurances that things were going to work out the way that she wanted them to.
Right.
And I'm like, well, you know, you've got your power of attorney in place. You've got your healthcare proxy in place. She has a trust. She has a will. I'm like, you're perfectly fine. There's really nothing you need to change.
Right.
But you really do need a checkup about every 5 years just to make sure everything's where it needs to be.
Right. I mean, there are so many cases where, you know, we meet with families and you know, this gentleman that we, you know, we're just talking about. I mean, he and his wife each have their own individual wills, but they're 30 plus years old.
Right.
You know, they have blended, you know, children and marriages and it just things do change. And we do have to look at, you know, I mean, so he's 86. So 30 years ago, he was 55. Right.
Right.
So things are much different at 55. His picture looked much different than it does at 86. And as we all know, while a will is a good thing to have, it's not, you know, you don't have somebody to make decisions for you if you don't have a power of attorney, if you don't have a healthcare proxy, if you don't have all of those things in order, because those are the things that drive the bus for you in the event that you can't make those decisions for yourself. And you know, going back to somebody that has some type of memory-related diagnosis, those are the tools that really allow you to stay in the driver's seat for so much longer because you're letting people know what you want. You're naming people that you trust that are in the event you can't make a decision or the event happens, right? Because that's usually when we find people around our table.
Exactly.
Is that event happens and we say, okay, you have the ability to X, Y, and Z. Whereas if, you know, and in a lot of circumstances when we meet families, they don't have the ability to do that because, you know, nothing was put in place. And those are really hard, you know, conversations to have with families to say, I'm sorry, you know, really at this point, guardianship is your only option.
And we talked about it yesterday with this gentleman too. And he's like, but I don't understand.
Right.
And we said, no, no, no. A guardianship even uncontested, which is probably wouldn't be contested,
right,
is probably around 10 grand, easy.
Right. And not something that we could do right now because his wife still has capacity.
Yes.
I mean, she's got some memory loss, yes, but she still has capacity. So, you know, it would be a while before we could actually do that. And in the meanwhile, everything's in limbo.
Man, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So we'd love for you to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll free 1-800-WROW-590. And as I was saying, the seminars that we have this month in March, I keep forgetting it's like not February anymore.
Crazy.
The one in Kingston on March 28th is going to be Wills versus Trust, but the one that we have in Glenn Sanders on March 21st, that's going to be aging in place. And that's where we're going to be talking about Medicaid and community Medicaid, how to preserve your assets, how you can get care on your couch. Kim laughs on that one, but it's one of those things where no one wants to go to a nursing home.
Right.
I used to only say I had one person that told me they wanted to go into a nursing home. I actually had someone come in the other day that she wants to go into a nursing home.
Wow.
So that's two now since I've been doing this. So most people don't want to go into a nursing home. So if you want to stay home and you want to try to get care in your home, then you really should start thinking about community Medicaid.
Absolutely, because, it takes time. It's not just, applying, getting approved, and, poof, as soon as you get approved, the services start. And as we know, sometimes the planning piece for becoming eligible for Medicaid takes a lot longer, too. And then you deal with the county on how long they take to approve your application. And then once the application is approved, we have to go through all of the program, nuances that are required. So, generally we tell people you really do need to kind of count on about 6 months at least. Some we get much sooner than that, and some take a little bit longer. But in the meanwhile, one of the things that I think we really do well as a firm is it's not just we don't leave them in this black hole.
No.
While we're going through this process. I mean, as soon as we start working with a client, one of the things that we're looking at are what are some of the other alternative resources that we can utilize in the community to help support a family, why they're doing this planning. And I think that's super important, too, to help the families. We carry them through and we support them through the whole process, which is unique. And not everybody does that.
No, definitely
so I think
not.
That's one of the things that I really love. And, there's a lot of collaboration between all of us. Okay, well, what if we did this? And, we do those fact pattern,
here's
an interesting fact pattern for you. What would we do in this situation to make it, different or better? Or was this the best option we had for this family? And I think that's, I think that communication and talking about our different clients and the different scenarios is really important. And I think it makes us really strong at what we do, which is really, really great.
And I think that kind of on the flip side of that, for nursing homes, mm-hmm. actually, there's a lot of people that will do the water cooler talk. Oh, well, this is what my grandmother did. This is what my mother did. This is what we did with my aunt. This is what we did with my uncle. And there are attorneys, too, that don't do elder law that...
Right.
Just like we don't do divorce proceedings, they don't do elder law. So sometimes they don't know what the nuances are.
Okay.
And I met with a gentleman this week that had gone to an attorney, and the attorney told him to do specific things about closing out accounts and transferring all the money into his name. And I was like, no, you can't do that. And he's like, well, why not? And then he's like, and the house and... What had happened with him is when his dad died, or dad died, sorry, dad didn't die, still alive. Whenever mom and dad got divorced, then dad deeded his half of the house to mom and son.
Oh.
And this whole time, the son thought he owned half the house.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't own half the house.
Right.
He owns half of dad's half of the house.
Right.
And the look on his face... I was just like, ooh, not good. But, and that's the thing. It's like, you've got to go to somebody that knows what they're doing and make sure you do the planning correctly. Because he's like, mm-hmm. well, they told me to transfer all the money out of mom's name because it was all joint, so it was really mine. And I'm like, nope, that's not how the Department of Social Services looks at it. Yep. They look at anything that has mom's name on it is her asset, or you'd have to prove that it was yours. So you've just made a transfer, and therefore she's not going to qualify for Medicaid.
Right.
So you really get some bad advice out there, so you really need to make sure that you go to somebody that knows what they're doing so you can get the proper advice and can make the correct decisions. And don't just say, well, fine, I'm just going to apply for Medicaid, and then, you know, once you're denied, you're denied.
Right, and then trying to fix all of that is much more challenging. I mean, one of the things that you know, while when we're looking at a couple in particular, right, there's always the one that the sick spouse that we call it. Uh-huh. But a lot of times the well spouse, the caregiver, actually ends up needing something before the sick spouse does. So we always look at that picture from a holistic view. And, you know, we want to plan for both people because generally right. the people that are coming in, they're both aging. It's not just one, you know. So I think that's another thing that we're looking at. We're not just looking at the individual that they supposedly scheduled the appointment for. You know, we talk about the needs of everybody and how that can change. And like the gentleman we met with yesterday, he had children ranging from mid-50s to mid-30s.
Right? I know.
So there's a 20-year span of kids that, you know, you have to kind of look at, too. Looks like we have a caller. We have Deb from Troy. Hi, Deb.
Good morning, Deb.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
I'm just calling because my husband and I have been to more than a few seminars on establishing a trust, et cetera, for Medicaid. And we're ready to make an appointment and come in and get things rolling. But the one main question that we have is, what is the actual cost of establishing a trust? We have our primary home and then a smaller home and then investments and everything. And we're just not clear. I mean, is it based on how much you actually put into the trust, or is there just one fee? And, you know, what is that fee if it's just that?
Excellent question. It's not based on what your assets are. So what you do whenever you're looking at setting up a trust is, number one, we offer a free consult so that people can see exactly how much it's going to cost. Because the way I look at a trust is it's kind of like buying a car. If you need more bells and whistles, it's more expensive. So, you know, if you're going to have a heated steering wheel and heated seats, it's going to be a little bit more expensive than one that, you know, you roll down the windows yourself. So it's all based on your criteria. You know, do you need a trust for grandchildren? Do you need a trust for someone that's on disability? So that's why we offer a free consult for people to come in. We go over everything with them. And then at that point in time, we say, based on our analysis of your situation, you know, you do need to do a trust. You don't need to do a trust. And this, you know, if you're just going to do wills, healthcare proxies, power of attorney, this is how much the fee would be. So there's no really cookie cutter estate plan. So I really couldn't tell you exactly how much it was going to cost because everyone is different.
I see. Okay. So then at this point, we should just come in for that consultation and take it from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you can do on Monday morning, you could give Stacy at our office a call. She's our scheduling coordinator. She could put time on one of the attorney's calendars. You can come in. We send out a questionnaire for you to fill out just so we kind of get an idea of, you know, who you are, who your kids are, and what kind of assets that you have, just kind of like a generic overview so that we can help you make the right decisions. And then at the end of the consult, we tell you, you know, based on our analysis, you need an irrevocable trust, a will, healthcare proxies, and power of attorney. And then we'd say, and this is how much it would be.
Oh, okay. All right. That sounds good. Then we'll give a call on Monday.
Sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
And thanks for the
Deb.
Call.
Have a great weekend.
Sure. Bye-bye.
And the phone number at the office is 518-465-7581, and Stacy is extension 126. So it's 518-465-7581, extension 126, and she can put time on any of the calendars for the attorneys. come in, have a free consult. We'll go over everything and then figure out what estate plan's best for you.
Right. I think that's one thing, you know, people ask that question I never understood why we couldn't give them a figure, right? Being the social worker, I wasn't really privy to, but just when I sit with you guys, because I do a lot of consultations with you guys as people come in, and when I sit and listen to all of the different things that go into an actual estate plan, it really is hard to gauge, you know, because sometimes it's very simple. Sometimes it can be pretty complicated depending on what kind of family that you have. You know, again, going back to our gentleman yesterday, this was his fourth marriage. so his needs are going to be much different, you know, and, you know, he's got five of his own children and then, you know, two children
from her,
from her, but he considers, you know, the oldest of that like a daughter. So it, you know, every situation is so individual and so, you know, we don't look at it from the perspective of this is what everybody gets. This is what everybody needs. I mean, so I think that's a really important, you know, point to make. And you know, one of the other things, like when I hear people say, well, I've got a will, I'm all set. I don't think a lot of times we understand what a will actually does or doesn't do, right? Like people think, oh, I'd put everything in my will. Who's going to get what? And I think a lot of times what they don't realize is sometimes 10, 15 months later, a will is still not been completely
probated,
you know, and it costs money on that end, right? So depending on where you look at you, the money gets spent. It's just whether you spend it on the front end or it gets spent on the back end from your heirs and how they have to deal with all of that.
Well, it's nice if you do it on the front end too, because it makes it so much easier for them on the back end.
Well, right, because kids, a lot of times they don't know. I mean, you know, we've been dealing with this a couple, and gosh, having, you know, so they've had a child that's, you know, stolen hundreds of thousands of dollars from them, and he's still a beneficiary on a lot of the life insurance policy. So, you know, having to do the research and the legwork to go through all that, I mean, people don't really remember what they did. A, and B, the realization of what it takes to change all of that sometimes, and look at the bigger picture of things as far as what needs to happen and how you need to protect yourself.
It is kind of scary, and Kim and I were talking yesterday. It was kind of rare that she and I actually had time in the office together to talk, and I was telling her that it just seems like there's been quite a few situations here lately where the kids have actually taken advantage of the elderly parents. And it's very sad. And that's the whole thing. It's like she said, you know, this gentleman, his son took hundreds of thousands of dollars from him. I think he's in jail now, right? Or he was in jail.
Arrested but out now. I mean, because that's just the way it happens, unfortunately.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I've had other seminars, I've had other situations in the last month where I've had people that took advantage of their relatives. And it's not right. I mean, that's not the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to appreciate your relatives and they're not supposed to support you for the rest of your life. And I think that people need to understand that if someone passes away and they leave you money, that's a bonus, right? You're not really entitled to it. If they put you in their will or if they put you in their trust and all of a sudden, you know, they pass away and then there's money there, then that's just really, really great. But there's no one that has any guarantees as to what they're going to get.
Well, and, you know, there's situations, too, where an individual decides that they want to give their money to charity.
Right.
You know, and maybe the family doesn't, they feel like their family is set and okay and they don't need that bonus and they want to provide it to a charity that maybe at some point in their life was very important to them. So they want to support that. And that's an individual's right. It's, you know, it's not up to kids, grandkids to say, can you actually believe that's where she's leaving all of her money? I find that so abrasive when, you know, in talking with families that and inappropriate that, okay, well, it's their money, so they can kind of choose where they want it to go, sort of thing. And a lot of times people don't really think that out either completely. And so having those conversations with them about what it means to either leave a percentage or a certain dollar figure, I think it's very eye-opening for a lot of folks when you really sit down with and have those conversations with them, because they don't really think about it, you know, and think about the full effect that choices will have later on for folks.
Yes, and I'm just laughing because I'm thinking of all the different clients I've had in this week that are leaving money to charities instead of the family because they think the family's all set.
Right.
In the past, I've had people that left everything to charity and the family was not all set. And I've had families that thought that, you know, well, this daughter or son, you know, they have the big house, they have the big car, they have everything. And then I have this other child that's just struggled all of their life. And I'm just going to leave it to the child that struggled. And the child that struggled is actually in a lot better position than the people that had the big house and had the big car. So there's a lot of people that whenever they come to the table after the person has passed away, that are shocked that, you know, well, why did they choose to give the money to this person as opposed to me? And I don't have those answers.
Right.
You know, but it's one of those things where you need to talk to your family. It's not a good, you know, it's not something everyone wants to talk about. But it's something that needs to be talked about because if you don't plan ahead and you don't do your documents, you could leave your kids or your spouse, like the situation we were talking about yesterday, in a really, really bad position because there's no power of attorney in place.
Right.
And so he really can't make decisions for her.
Right. No, that's a very good point. And when we have, you know, again, when families come in and sit down with us, a lot of times they'll come and say, I want a will or I want a trust or this is what we need to do. And I've seen a couple times people get a little frustrated because we're like, well, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about why you think this. Because a lot of times they come in and they think they know exactly what they need.
Exactly.
And there are lots of times when we sit down and we kind of say, what are your future plans? What, you know, what about the house? What do you want? You know, a lot of times... things are simple. They're not nearly as complicated as they think as when they walked in the door, you know. And a lot of times, you know, we get the call or somebody comes in and says, you know, I need to protect my assets for the nursing home, and not realizing the whole other thing that surrounds. It's not just the nursing home, right? Long-term care is much more than just nursing home care, right?
Exactly.
And it happens a lot longer and a lot before nursing home. We're not just nursing home eligible. We don't wake up one morning and we're just not nursing home eligible, right? In order to get in a nursing home, you actually have to be medically eligible for that.
Exactly.
So, so I think we're coming up on our break, right?
And we'll be right back with the second half of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we're going to be here for the next half hour to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, and Medicaid planning. We had one caller the first half hour, and we're hoping for more this half hour. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900, or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. And before we went to the break, Kim was saying that, you know, it's one of those things where you want to plan ahead, but you want to have the correct plan when you're planning ahead.
Right. That is for sure. Just because you know, like we've talked about, everybody's situation is a little different and unique, and there's not one way that works for everybody, sort of thing.
No, and the thing is, too, a lot of people don't realize that you can't put your retirement accounts in a trust.
Right.
And the way baby boomers, a lot of them have saved, is they've pushed everything into their retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. I meet with people, and they're okay as far as cash flow, and they own their own house and everything like that, but the majority of their assets are in their retirement accounts.
Right.
And the good thing about New York, as opposed to Massachusetts, because Jane Marie also is licensed in Massachusetts, and she's like, yeah, this stuff doesn't fly in Massachusetts,
right,
is your retirement accounts are protected, mm-hmm. meaning that the nursing home can only take the required minimum distributions. And so the required minimum distribution is the amount that you're forced to take after you're 70 and a half.
Right.
Now, Department of Social Services has their own actuarial tables, so they tend to condense it a little bit. So if you were, you know, 60 years old and you ended up going to a nursing home, your required minimum distribution is obviously going to be less because you have a longer life expectancy than if you're 90.
Right.
So, but the retirement accounts, again, are protected. Basically, the income, the required minimum distribution, is going to have to go out to the nursing home to pay for your care. But the principal in the IRA, the 401k, the 403b, those are all going to be protected. It's just the required minimum distribution would go to pay for your care, along with your pension, along with your Social Security. Those are all assets that are available to pay for your care. The assets that you can put into a trust, you can put property in there, you can put CDs in there, you can put stocks, you can put bonds, you can put money markets. I always tell people, keep your walking around money outside,
right?
You know, because you want to be able to go on vacation and keep the house up and stuff like that. But I mean, the easiest thing to put into a trust is property.
Right. And that's usually the biggest asset people have throughout their life that they want to, you know, create that to be part of their legacy as they go on. I know a lot of times when we meet families, and, you know, we have to do a financial picture because we have to understand what's available. We have to understand, you know, does Medicaid make sense for this individual? I mean, so about 6 months ago, you know, Dave and I were working together on a client, and he had a fairly large, you know, portfolio over $1 million and a very high monthly income. And so when we were looking at options for him, you know, one of the things that we were exploring was care at home, care on your couch for him. But it quickly became evident that while he needed 24-hour supervision, he didn't need 24-hour care. So to have somebody in his home just leering over him 24 mm-hmm. hours a day, I thought was going to be pretty invasive for him. And so we started talking about different options. We started, and assisted living really seemed to be the perfect fit for him because he had his own apartment. He could be in there by himself, but there was support services there, 3 meals a day, medication reminders, you know, assistance with any of his activities of daily living, if he needed that. But for the most part, he wouldn't have somebody sitting next to him 24/7, and he felt like that was going to be, you know, very challenging for him to have somebody. And he was also concerned about the items in his home. He started talking about needing to pack everything up so that it didn't get stolen or broken. And those are all concerns that when we sit down with clients and talk to them, what we look at. Just because we can apply for Medicaid for somebody doesn't necessarily mean that's actually what we're going to end up doing, because things may change along the way. And we look at that. We look at all the options that are available for folks to be able to do that. You know, we just busted somebody out of a nursing home not too long ago.
Yeah, we did.
Because that's where he unfortunately landed. His family lives far away, doesn't have kids. And it just kind of, his sister who lives in Pennsylvania is a power of attorney, wanted to understand from a power of attorney perspective what her responsibilities were. And, you know, he had had a hospitalization, didn't really belong in the hospital because he didn't have a medical need. So the hospital just looks to get them out as quickly as possible.
Exactly.
So he ended up in a nursing home. Nursing home's not appropriate for him. we could bring him back home, but he's doing beautifully at the assisted living. So we may change that plan. I mean, we were kind of originally looking at maybe we would apply for community Medicaid for him to go back home and live. But he's really enjoying being at the assisted living. I think, you know, the social aspect of it, having, you know, people who care about him, taking care of him, he really is enjoying himself. So, you know, we're going to kind of wait and see how it goes. And of course, for, you know, he's got aging brother and sister. So they're his closest support system. So it becomes harder as families age, you know, siblings, to care for one another, especially when there are no children involved. So we really do have to look at it from a holistic point of view to think, well, what does make the most sense for each individual? I think we have another caller on the line. Oh, we don't have another caller on the line. They didn't want to
talk
to us.
They just wanted to talk to Josh.
Okay.
got it. So it's interesting that you said, you know, assisted living and this and that. I met with a couple this week, and I actually got Kim on the phone.
Right.
So I talked to her later. She goes, oh, I didn't realize that they were sitting there, too. But we were trying to figure out options for them because they can still take care of themselves. They just can't take care of the house. And they still want to have, they will still want to be, you know, in an apartment, but they want to be in an apartment where there are, you know, things like meals and where there's transportation and stuff like that. So, you know, that's where the whole aging in place comes up,
right?
So do you need assisted living or do you just need senior living with a little bit of help, with a little bit of somebody that traveled with trips and stuff like that? You know, there's a lot of senior living places that they have transportation, they have meals, but they're not on top of you 24/7.
Right.
You know, and I remember an aunt that lived in like an assisted living, but it was like senior / assisted living. And the way they checked on you is you had to come down to the lobby every day at your mailbox and flip this little flag up. So if like midday they looked and your little flag wasn't flipped on your mail, then they would come and check on you.
Ah, which is great. I mean, a lot of them do different ways. You know, sometimes they have those little flip things on their door. So you just have to open your door, you know, going down to the mail. And, you know, we do live in an area that's very rich in senior living options. And sometimes it's finding the right community that has the right fit. And we collaborate with a lot of different people to help us with that. I mean, we're not the end all be all. I certainly have a lot of knowledge about all of the facilities that are around, but we also collaborate with other individuals to kind of talk about everyone's unique situation, because just like for us in putting together a unique, you know, every fact pattern, you know, estate plan for someone, housing's a big deal because you want to understand, do they want transportation? Do they want meals? At some point, is this where they want to, do they want to age there?
Right.
So do they have the ability to receive services in this place? You know, do they have the money to, you know, because some places are a buy-in, some places are just monthly, some places, you know, and if it's a buy-in, how do we work with them to help them, you know, either make sure that they can then access care at some point? Are they using all of their, are they tying all of their money up in this buy-in so they don't have the ability to either then pay for care or qualify for care? I mean, that was something that we were talking about the other day as well. You know, how do we help people access, you know, for the long haul?
Mm-hmm.
And people don't downsize it at 50, 60. You know, a lot of times it's 80, 85 when they're ready to move out of the house. So it we know that care is imminent at some point. So we want to make sure that where they're going is a place that they can stay. Because it's traumatic to move after being in a house, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 years sometimes. The people that we meet with have that. You know, they've been there for a long time, so it's very traumatic to kind of go through one move, much less have to do it again when a place either doesn't meet their need for the long term or something happens that they have to leave.
And we would love for you to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-273-8255. WROW590. One of the sayings that someone said to me this week was, when we're young, we spend all of our health earning money, right? And when we're older, we spend all of our money trying to get health.
Oh, wow. That's so true. I hadn't ever really heard that, but that's, wow.
Yeah. I mean, so that's the thing. It's like when you're young, you work hard, you don't take your vacations, you do whatever you have to do to get that almighty buck, right? And then when you're older and you've got the money and then your health fails, and then you spend thousands and thousands of dollars trying to take care of yourself. So it's kind of a... It's kind of an interesting thing. When she said that, I'm like, that's just freaking depressing.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said to you, you should go to the Cherry Blossom Festival in D.C. You should just do it because, you know, you can't take it with you, right? We were just talking about that, that you need to enjoy the time now. I mean, and that was one of the things, too, that when I worked with the Alzheimer's Association, I mean, people would ask me all the time, isn't it so depressing, you know, to meet with people that kind of have this diagnosis? And while in lots of cases, yes, it is, because you see people, you know, who had these plans, who wanted to do all these things. But in a lot of circumstances, it actually gives people the kind of the free pass to just go do things. Particularly when we meet with people who have an early onset or even younger onset. So, right. You know, younger onset being younger than 65, and early onset can be any age. It's just the beginning stages. And to give people the ability to say, look, you know, you've got this bucket list.
Right.
Now's the time to do it. Don't wait. So while there's not a crystal ball to kind of know what the progression is going to look like, we know right now that you have the ability to do these things. So you should take advantage of that and do it. You know, where, how many times do we meet with people? And, I mean, you know, I turned 50 this year, and the number of folks that I know that are my age that, you know, have either had some kind of chronic, potentially terminal illness, or have had a stroke or a heart attack, you just don't ever know. So you can't take it with you.
Nope, you can't take it with you. We would love for you to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900, or toll free 1-800-WROW-590. And again, the seminar this month in Kingston is Wills versus Trust, where we're going to discuss, do you need a will? Do you need a trust? If you have a will, do you need a trust? And vice versa.
Right.
And we have one seminar locally around Albany, which is on March 21st at the Glenn Sanders Mansion. And that one's on aging in place, which is kind of what we've been talking about today. And it's kind of interesting that people don't realize that, kind of like Kim was saying earlier, they think, well, I've got a will that I did 30 years ago. Everything's going to be fine. And you really need to have, I think a power of attorney is the most important document you can have. It's like a will. If you don't have one, the state of New York's going to decide where your money goes.
Right.
If you don't have a healthcare proxy, they're going to look to your next of kin. And if they don't have next of kin, then the doctors and nurses can make the decisions for you.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, which is crazy. But if you don't have a power of attorney, then no one can make financial decisions for you, and no one can do planning for you.
Right. Well, and, you know, I'll share my personal experience. You know, when my husband and I sat down to do all of our estate planning, because we have a child, you know, we were really surprised at a lot of the things that were advised to us, you know, because a lot of times you just think, oh, I'm going to name my child beneficiary, you know, your spouse and then your child. And,
right.
But you don't ever really think about, you know, a 5-year-old potentially inheriting, you know, however much life insurance it is that
right.
you have. You really have to think about, well, who's going to oversee that? And you really don't want that in that child's name. Because as we all know, teenagers are, they are terrible at making decisions. And, you know, they have no idea. So you really do need to, even as a young, like we talk about old people, but as young people, we all need to make those plans. So we have a call, Christine, who is in Columbia County. Hi, Christine.
Good morning, Christine.
Hi there. This is really weird, but I just happened to be, I got up and I turned the radio on, and and you guys were on, but I found it extremely interesting and decided, well, couldn't wait till they gave me a telephone number so that I could call in and see if I could give some either suggestions or maybe I'll actually make an appointment to bring my mother in. My mother is recently widowed. She's losing her eyesight and some of her hearing. So, but she has chosen to live by herself. And at this point, I'm the primary caregiver. And I think you and anybody who's a caregiver understands how taxing that can become on a person. Not that you don't want to be there for them and you love them dearly. You just have so many things in your own life at this time that need to also be addressed. So you need some help. But my biggest concern at this point is I can't get my mother to even consider going to someplace. She wants to stay at home, and she's very resistant to suggestions of looking into these possibilities because she wants to stay at her place of residence. And, you know, it's the familiarity with everything. And so I understand all that kind of stuff because I'm a widow myself, but I'm a younger widow, much younger widow. And I just think that maybe if you could tell me how if you have any suggestions, how to talk to her about the possibility, or maybe even coming and making an appointment, or if you had, I'm in Columbia County, and no offense to government, I don't, maybe I should be pissed at the government, but Columbia County seems to be the one county that's lost of a lot of things. You know, it's very difficult for some things to be had, and so I don't want it to send her who knows where. I want to be able to visit her several times a week, but not 15 times a day or on a daily basis. Is that too much to be? Do you have any thoughts on places in Columbia County, or is this something I need to come in with my mother to discuss with you? Is that a big question there? Is there a question in there at all? You've
gotten so I think there are a lot of questions in there. You know, and I think that's another thing that makes our firm unique is having a certified care manager myself with, with the firm. Because one of the things that I look at with folks, I mean, you're right, Columbia County is definitely lacking in a lot of services. And I think Columbia County for a long time has been what we call sort of a bedroom community where people live, but they work outside of the area. So there hasn't been a way to really, substantiate services. And it may be possible for her to stay at home. It's just putting the right supports in place. And so a lot of times that's where we start. We start the conversation with, what is the house like? Can it accommodate her into her years as far as accessibility? Are there things that we can do to the house that will make it safe and accessible long term for her? Can we get care in the home? I mean, what's the caregiver pool where she lives, in the area that she lives? Geographically, does it make sense? You know, we have some people that live in areas like that maybe 6 months of the year, particularly this time of year when weather's really bad and we need to rely on others to keep the house going as far as fuel and snow clearing and safe, that maybe they decide 6 months of the year they're going to go somewhere,
right.
And the other 6 months of the year where it's really nice, they can go home and live in their own home with, maybe they need some services, some caregiver support services, maybe they don't. But it's really looking at the bigger picture of, what she needs. I know as a caregiver, sometimes it's really challenging to say, I want to make sure nothing happens, right? But that's like us having our small children, wrapping them in bubble wrap and never allowing them the opportunity to explore because we're afraid something's going to happen. It happens when our children are small, and then actually as our parents get older, we want to protect them from
exactly.
The bad things that are going to happen. And, we all have that right of risk, right? Every time we get in a car to go somewhere, it is, we're risking our lives, I guess, you know. I feel like we do that every time we, you know, have bad weather at our office.
Yeah.
Because things freeze really fast there. So it's that constant, you know, you just have to be aware. You have to understand what's out there and what's available. And educating yourself on those things, I think, is the first step to that.
And what you need to think about, too, is does mom have documents in place? If, you know, if she's a widow now, who, if she does have documents, who's the number one? Who's the number two? So if dad's gone now, did we change the beneficiaries on the accounts? Did we change the beneficiaries on the retirement accounts, on the life insurance? Is everything joint or has a beneficiary? Because you need to make sure that if something happened to mom, that you don't end up having to go through probate. Because you want to make sure that everything's either in a trust or it has beneficiaries or it's joint, so you don't have to go through probate. So not only are you trying to plan for, you know, where she's going to live and how, who's going to take care of her, but you need to worry about how her finances are going to be taken care of too. Because if she doesn't have a power of attorney, and let's just say she became incapacitated, then you're not going to be able to make financial decisions for her and be able to take care of her. So, you know, it's probably something that if mom was willing to come into the office and sit down and go over everything, then that would probably be a good start, because we really try to give people an overview as to what they need as far as documents go and what's available out there for care. Do you want, like Kim said, do you want to stay home? Is it even possible for you to stay home?
And one of the things I think that's unique about our firm too is that we do home visits, you know. And it's nice. Jay Marie lives in Massachusetts, and so she drives right by Columbia County twice a day, you know, she on her way in and on her way out. And, you know, that makes us very unique as well, because it allows us the opportunity to see where somebody lives, to see how they're living, to make suggestions on how it might be safer, how it might make sense to, you know, for the long haul for them to be able to stay there. Or to be able to say, this might not be the best plan, you know, that you have in place. So thanks for the call.
Okie dokie. Well, thank you. And could I have the telephone number for the law firm?
Sure. The phone number for the office is 518-465-7581. So that's 518-465-7581. And Stacy is the one that schedules all the appointments, and she's at extension 126.
Yes, I think that, you know, maybe just a consultation with somebody in the, the financial stuff is pretty much that we could just discuss. That's all been very well taken care of, but it's the continuation that a little more more suggestions and somebody different talking to my mother might be more accepting than just me telling my mom.
That's true. That is
true.
Very true.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to me babble, and I hope somebody else will have the cards in intuition and get up and go to make the phone call too, because, you know, it's always good to hear somebody else tell somebody what might be able to, what we might be able to have out there. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and thanks for the call. And I think actually we may have another call coming in, but it's going to be a couple seconds before Josh can get him up on the board. But, you know, we'd love to hear from you guys. I think we have like 3 minutes left. So it's going to have to be fairly quick.
Right.
And if you want to set up an appointment, again, the phone number at the office is 518-465-7581. Again, 518-465-7581. And Stacy is at extension 126. If you want to go to one of our seminars, you can register online, or again, you can give us a call at the office. And they're coming up on the 21st. Which is Aging in Place, and the 28th, which is Wills versus Trust, which is out in Kingston.
Yep. So we have Sue calling from Boston Spa. Hi,
good morning, Sue.
Good morning. I can barely hear you all of a sudden.
Oh, well, that's not good.
Maybe we were just stepping away. Sorry about that.
That's partially me, too. I was just wondering, can you set up an appointment? I'm a client. But can you set up an appointment to review the Medicare part of it with Kim or somebody?
The Medicare part of it?
Well, I meant, you know, the social services, I guess.
Yeah, that's...
I don't know what the right word is.
Yes, no, yeah. Kim meets with clients, too, yes. Kim is, she consults with the clients as far as planning ahead, as far as the social aspect of it, as rather than the document part of it. Yeah, you just have to give Stacy a call, or you could give Kim a call, and they could set something up for you.
And I was just wondering, after you pass, who initiates the follow-up of everything? I mean, do your heirs get in touch with you, or how does that work?
Usually we get a phone call if mom and dad have told, you know, the kids who has their documents and stuff. Generally, one of the kids will call and say, you know, mom passed away, what do I need to do? And we'll usually say, hey, you know, after the dust settles, give us a call, come on in, we'll go over everything with you and tell you what you need to do. And generally, that's about it. We tell them, okay, there is a house of the trust, you need to sell the house and divvy up the money, and usually it's not a big deal. And then sometimes if there's assets that were outside the trust and we have to probate, that's kind of another story. But generally, the family reaches out to us, and then we just set up a consult form and go over everything.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
And I just wanted to say a big shout-out, because I know we're up north now, so we're in South Glens Falls and Glen Falls to the North Country folks, and I hope that we're listening. But South High Marathon Dance is going on as we speak, and I'm not sure many people know what that is, but it's the high school in South Glens Falls, and they're actually up to $831,000 right now.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Raising money in their community, and they disperse it to many people, but that's just like a phenomenal, you know, task. They dance for about 36 hours. So way to go, Bulldogs.
Yeah, congratulations. That's great.
Yeah. So I think that's it for us today.
So have a great weekend. Stay warm.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.